Isn't it great to hear that water? Reminds me of some time spent last summer in the kayak. Larry Mueller, thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. And you know what? Kayaking and canoeing, according to many recent reports, are becoming even more popular. And what about you? Have you thought about joining the paddle sport community? Maybe you're already there. Hope you are. And Darren Bush is with us today to talk about paddling, canoeing, and kayaking, and also to talk about Canoecopia. He's the chief paddling evangelist, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. Lots to talk about with the Canoecopia event, which is coming up this weekend. So we'll talk about speakers and other all the things you can see at Canoecopia. It's really quite an event. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, maybe about Canoecopia, maybe just about particularly canoes, or maybe a question about kayaks or paddles or repairs. He can talk about it with you. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Darren Bush, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, here you got Canoecopia coming up this weekend, and here we've got all of this news about the COVID-19 and so forth. How are you guys dealing with it?
We're taking it seriously. We've encouraged our customers who are in high-risk groups, for sure, to stay home. Don't come. We've followed all the CDC guidelines. There's a link on our website of what you should do, including all the standard hand-washing, don't touch your face. We're putting more sanitary stations in at the Alliant Energy Center. We have hand sanitizer everywhere.
Okay.
The official handshake at Rutabaga is a fist bump or a bow. So I'm kind of hoping that the Japanese style takes over, because I think it's actually kind of nice. So we'll all be bowing at each other and just being careful.
And go on.
And, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So I talked to a gentleman yesterday who's like, he's like 65, and he's like, you know, I'm kind of on the bubble. I said, well, if you're talking to me on the phone right now, it means you're worried about it, so stay home.
Yeah.
And he said, I got a mother that I said, stay home. I said, we'll be here in 3 weeks, you know, don't worry about it. And we just expect attendance to be down a little bit, and that's natural, and we're okay with that. We want people to be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, thinking about Canoecopia, how long have you been participating?
Well, my first Canoecopia was in 1990. I was in a leg cast because I had broken my leg, slipping on the ice and dropping a kayak on my leg. So I was putting price tags on dry bags. And that started in 94. I kind of took the show over. And then in 2002, kind of handed over to a team because it was too much for one guy.
Yeah, and it's kind of a year-round event anymore.
We start planning for the next year, the week after this one. We've got pages and pages of notes. I've got the best employees that anybody could ever ask for. My staff are wonderful.
They really are nice people.
They're great people. And a friend of mine gave me advice years ago. He said, don't hire good paddlers, hire good people that happen to be good at paddling. Right? And don't hire a good lawyer, hire a good person who's skilled at law. And don't hire a good doctor, hire a good person who's skilled at medicine. So I try and hire good people. And then put them where they are best at, and you know, use their talents. And then I just try and stay out of their way.
How much has the show changed, or maybe let put it this way: how has the show changed over the years?
The biggest change was probably when they tore down the Dane County Fairgrounds building, which was aesthetically challenged and mechanically unsound, and built the Alliant Energy Center. So we moved into that. When that happened, we realized that we needed to be a lot more organized about it to just do a better job. And people really wanted more education. So we added more and more and more speakers. Mm-hmm. And those people really are, that's what they're there for. They're there to educate and to inspire.
And let's, we'll talk specifics, but just in general for the person sitting out there who says, what the heck's Canoecopia? Give us a broad brush of what people are going to see and so forth.
Well, basically, it's a quarter million square feet. We take over the Alliant Energy Center Exposition Hall, and basically fill it up with people that, that love paddling. So we have manufacturers that are there with all their wares, from boats to PFDs to paddles to paddling gear to camping gear to paddle clothing, all the things you need to paddle. And then we have nonprofits. We have a nonprofit area that's the lobby, and so we invite friends of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So friends of the state parks, friends of the, you know, whatever, friends of the Wabakimi, friends of the Boundary Waters, all those people who are there to help, you know, preserve the places we love to paddle. And then we have the speakers. So,
there is a lot to see. And buy, too. You can purchase, obviously, lots of different things there.
There's lots of stuff there. Our primary mission is education. But my finding is that if you educate people, they want to reward that with some loyalty and end up buying from us, and that's wonderful.
So, and it runs Friday?
4 to 9 Friday, 9 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 5 Sunday.
And pretty much small fee to get in and so forth.
Yeah, early bird pricing ended today.
No.
But it's $15 a day. And given the speakers, well, it's $30 for a weekend pass. I would say that we've had a huge increase in weekend pass sales this year because people know they can't see the whole thing in a day.
And hear all the speakers. I mean, well, you'll never hear all of them, but I mean, you may have, all right, I want to see those two are on at the same time maybe, so I've got to come another day to.
Yeah. Well, Amelia is the best person in the world. I love to work with Amelia. She's always cheerful, always happy, always positive. And when people throw curveballs at her, she just steps out of the box and hits them. And she does the speaker schedule. So when she's got everything laid out, she's got Post-its on this giant table, and she's moving them around to make sure we don't have two popular speakers against each other at the same time so people can make good choices. It's like playing that game with 15 squares and 16 spots, and you move them around, right, until they're all in order. So she's fantastic. Yeah.
What is it about paddle sports? I said in the beginning, you read that paddle sports have really increased and are continuing to increase in popularity. What is it about paddle sports that attracts people?
I think it's because it's a lot of things to a lot of people. For some people, it's a mechanism to get to where they want to go and do things. So like the people that hunt and fish, it's a vehicle to get to where they want to hunt and fish. For people that are trying to, you know, camp, they're not so much paddlers, but they want to use the mechanism to get to where they want to go. For a lot of people, though, it's just how does the boat feel, right? And I call it kinetic meditation, right? When you get around water, water's different. I mean, there's a reason you use that opening clip, right, with that water. I delivered a couple boats the other day to a woman just because she said, my rack's not on my car yet. And I said, I'll just drop them off. You live a mile from my house. And she lived next to one of those culverts, and there's snow right now. And I said, how do you not just sit out here, right, and listen to this? It's amazing. She says, sometimes we'll put chairs in our garage and just sit there and listen. It's a magical sound.
Yeah, it is indeed. And you know, there are benefits to it, too. I mean, a good paddle is a good workout. And
yeah, it's great. Is you can do the full-on racing, surf ski, super go fast, heart
not
rate
me.
Monitor stuff. Well, that's a small percentage of the people. Yeah. But if you want to go out and just get your blood moving, you know, get to 120 beats per minute, you know, fill a nice, healthy glow, low impact. There's a lot of people with bad knees, and I have a lot of former backpackers that come in and turn into sea kayakers because sea kayaking is just backpacking on the water, right? You carry the same gear, you carry the same stuff, you just happen to be not hard on your knees.
Talking with Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, and visiting with him, we've been talking primarily here about Canucopia, which is coming up this weekend, Friday through Sunday. But we can talk more specifically about canoes and kayaks and paddles and so forth. So if you have questions about those, please join in. If you have questions about Canucopia, I hope you'll join in with that as well. Or what's been, I'd like to hear what your experience has been at Canucopia. I bet it's been a good one. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mo just had called in, couldn't hang on, but wonders what you think about packable kayaks. And maybe for those who aren't familiar, explain what Mo wants to know about and what you think of them.
Sure. So packable kayaks, just like it sounds, it's a kayak that you're able to pack up. And there's several different kinds of these. There's inflatables, which used to be beach toys, and they're not anymore. They're very well made. I mean, if you pay $200 for an inflatable kayak, it's going to be a $200 kayak. Mm-hmm. But there's very, very nice kayaks that actually inflate. They're stiff. They paddle well. There's sectional kayaks where you can take them apart and put them in the back of your truck without having to put it on top. And then packable, they're usually more like, I hate to use the term tinker toys, but it's something people understand, it's long sections of tubing that are put together. Usually they're shot quarter together like a tent pole, and then there's a frame they snap into and then a skin that goes over that. They are now as good as far as I'm concerned, a hard shell kayak. They're very, very well made.
Wow.
Yeah, so next time I go to Belgium, I'm taking a folding boat with me because there's water everywhere in Belgium and in northern Belgium and southern Holland. And the canals are beautiful, and it's fun to paddle up next to the houses that are from the 1600s. And I can put it in a backpack. It's about the size of a golf bag, basically, a bag of golf clubs.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking some people take their golf bags with them on vacation, and Darren here is taking his kayak bag with him.
The next trip we do, we're doing a trip this year that's a wilderness trip. In 2021, I'm taking my wife to Italy, and we're going to Puglia, which is the southern heel, right? Mm-hmm. And I lived there 1982, 1983, and there's some wonderful sea kayaking, and not a lot of people kayak there. It's an interesting, I think it's because of storage. No one has garages in Italy.
Yeah.
Right? They have little sub-garages. But with folding boats, they're great. I have a friend that runs a business in Venice who does kayak tours in Venice, and talk about a great way to see the city.
So when you're talking about cost, you mentioned a $200 one. It's probably not going to give you a great...
It's not going to be durable, and it's not going to paddle well.
Yeah.
You can get a good, solid paddling kayak for probably in the $700 to $800 range. The folding ones that have the skins and the tinker toys, the aluminum frames, they're closer to, they're over $2,000, but that's the cost of essentially a hard shell kayak. I think $2,500 is there's one called Track, T-R-A-K. It's a fantastic kayak.
And it's a couple of grand.
Yeah, 25, something like that.
Yeah, there we go. Well, you can join in too. Let's go to Paul in Drummond has a question. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Say, I'm 62 years old, been canoeing all my life, started in canvas and cedar strip canoes, and I'm now canoeing in Kevlar. But I've always been frustrated with the newer style canoes that manufacturers haven't been able to design some type of keel for cross-directional drifting. I know they claim that the design of the hull compensates for that. That's, in my opinion, not true. And I wonder if you've heard anything, had any idea what's going on in the industry.
Very good question. I tend to agree with the manufacturers. I think a good design doesn't really need it. However, anything's possible. I mean, if you have a Kevlar boat and you want a keel on it, there are people that will take a piece of wood, just like you would on a wooden canvas canoe, and you can affix that to the bottom of your boat if you want to. There's nothing that says you can't do that. Most aluminum canoes have keels on them, but that's because that's an artifact of manufacturing. They're already putting it together with a seam. They might as well put a little thing sticking down to make them paddle better. But that's because the design of aluminum canoes is limited by the materials. But if you want a keel on your boat, you could use a heavy-duty epoxy or something like that, and get a 3/4 by 3/4 inch of wood and plane it down so it follows the shape of the wood canvas boats that you've had, and affix that to the bottom of your boat.
And you can So you can make it for a few bucks.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to find a piece of ash probably that's, mm-hmm. you know, 16, 17 feet long.
Yeah.
And find a friend with a table saw and get some good marine epoxy, something like a G-Flex would be something. Prepare the surface where you're going to glue it down and then just get a way to clamp it, because that's going to be the hard part. You need to clamp it down. Yeah. I don't think that I would put screws through it. That's just my opinion. But you could find a way to do it. There's a way.
Paul, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Visiting today with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports about Canoocopia and about canoes and kayaks. Join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Sasha Van Allen, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking canoeing and kayaking today here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, Canoocopia this weekend, March 13th through the 15th. And so we're talking about that a bit, but we're also just talking more specifically about canoes and about kayaks and all the associated accessories that come with them. Questions for Darren, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And people always want to know, what's the latest? What's new? What do we got going on? Is there a lot new out there?
Yeah, quite a bit. It's not so much revolution as evolution. That's what I always say,
yeah.
Right? Because let's face it, the canoes are pointy at both ends and have been since they started making canoes. It's more subtle. One thing that's coming back with a vengeance is pack canoes. And pack canoes aren't anything new. They've been used in the Adirondacks for over 100 years. There's a gentleman named George Washington Sears who went by the Native American name Nesmuk, who was actually a cobbler from Philadelphia and had health issues. He had lung issues, and so the doctor told him to get out of the city, so he moved up to the Adirondacks and built these little cedar boats that were 10, 11 feet long, and he sat on the bottom of them and used a double-bladed paddle and could go in with, you know, a backpack with 10 pounds in it and carry a 15-pound boat and go wherever he wants. He was a diminutive little guy. I think he was under 5 feet tall and under 100 pounds. But became kind of an evangelist for the pack canoe. And we've gone full circle now as people are getting older and kayaks are, you know, they're as light as they can be, but they're still, you know, some of them are heavy. If you take a pack boat, all it is a kayak with the deck taken off, and you can get them down in the 20, 21-pound
range.
Just anybody can pick them up, and they're from, you know, 12 feet long up to, there's some 15 footers, and there's a guy speaking at the show named Joe Robinette, and Joe Robinette's from Ontario. He has 1.5 million followers on his YouTube channel. He's a bushcraft guy, and so he paddles with his dog. So the pack boat is an ideal way to paddle with your dog, because your center gravity is lower, and you can still use a single-bladed paddle or a double-bladed paddle, whatever you prefer. But then your dog sits lower, too. So it's a really good tool for doing a lot of things. A lot of folks like to go to the boundary waters, but they don't have the skill to paddle a solo canoe because it's, you know, it's not easy. You can take a pack boat and go up there and paddle with a kayak paddle and go anywhere you want. And when you get to a portage, you don't have to figure out how to portage a kayak, which is a complete pain in the butt.
Yeah.
But you can pick up a pack boat and jump over the portage, especially if it's 25 pounds.
So that's one new thing. We have some callers online. We'll get back to some other things going on here. Tom in Heartland will hear from you next, though. Hi, Tom.
Hello. How do you do?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've paddled a lot. I've paddled up in the Apostle Islands. I've paddled in the Boundary Waters. I've paddled from California out to Catalina Island on a Klepper. My friend, he bought a Klepper canoe, and he got a military skin for it. And it was wonderful, really nice. It was two pieces. We took a ferry out to Catalina Island, and then we paddled 36 miles back. and a real nice adventure. But also, we now have a place out in Spring Green, and I just talked to a neighbor who is saying that the current picks up around Lone Rock. And we have not only a canoe, but we also have a motorboat. But I don't know, really, I haven't been on the river yet, but I was just wondering about some of the, what is it in about with when the currents get a little bit stronger. I paddled when I was in Troop 106 back in the day. We didn't backpack, we canoed. And so I've been on a lot of rapids before, but with my wife now, I'm a little bit concerned about how she'd fare with all that. If she'd get too anxious about being on some fast water.
Yeah.
Yeah, valid concern. The Wisconsin River, in my opinion, is a big, wide, moving lake, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I mean, it is a river. What I found is that the spring is when the water is really moving, and there's gauges at Muscadet, and then there's a, I think it's We Energy that runs the dam at Sauk City has a report of how much water is going through there, and you know the local outfitters know exactly when it's okay and not okay to go, and they'll shut her down if it's moving too fast. As long as you stay away from the shores where the trees are falling, and they're called strainers, that's where people get into trouble. Is they run into those trees because the current moves faster than they think it does. But if you're staying out in the middle and the water's low-ish and, you know, you're paying attention to what's going on around you. But that's true of every place, every river.
Yeah.
If you're paying attention to what's going on around you, you're going to be safer than if you're just kind of floating along, not paying attention. So I paddle the Wisconsin River probably more than any other body of water, and I love it dearly. But yeah, Spring Green to Lone Rock is a very nice stretch. Spring Green to Boscobel is even nicer, and Spring Green to Wyalusing is really,
yeah, even nicer.
Really, yeah, if you've got the time. Yeah, and so from Sauk Dam to Wyalusing, it's about a 3-day trip, and it's lovely. But yeah, just be aware of the water levels.
And he can check like We Energies on their line on
yeah.
their website or something.
Yeah, if you just Google Sauk Prairie Dam. And get a water release, something like that. The rest of the gauges for the whole state, in fact, are on waterdata.usgs.gov, and you can see every USGS gauge in the state. And I use those frequently, and you can actually set thresholds. So like when the Sugar River goes above 2.5 at Broadhead, I know it's a really good time to go paddle it. And if it drops below 1.5, it's going to be kind of rocky. So I get a notice when it's above 2.5, and if I can break away, I break away.
So there you go, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Beth in Warrens will go to you next. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So my question is, before we lived in Wisconsin, we lived in Hawaii. And we did a lot of surfing in Hawaii and made our own surfboards. We even made a Green Bay Packers surfboard.
Cool.
Could you use the same products making surfboards as making your own canoe or kayak?
The answer is sort of. Usually surfboards are made of a foam, right, that is shaped and then wrapped in fiberglass. That is an inside-out process. Canoes and kayaks are made from an outside-in process where you have a mold and you put the material into the mold and keep adding it until it has the characteristics you want, and you pop it out. So you can use fiberglass and you can use composite materials, but as far as using foam goes, the only place we see foam in canoes and in kayaks is in a thin foam core just to stiffen the bottom.
Okay. Yeah, because we made our own in Hawaii, and I thought, you know, we were younger, so we never kayaked. We only surfed. And now, living here in Wisconsin, we do a lot of kayaking. And I thought, well, could we do that?
Yep. Have you been to Sheboygan before?
Yes.
You know about the surf break over there?
Yes.
Yeah, with their 7-millimeter neoprene.
Yes, and you better wear your heaviest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is not Hawaii, but they actually have decent waves. It's kind of nuts.
Oh man, Beth, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take another call here. Ron in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I wonder if you had any experience with sailing canoes. You know, a canoe with a sailing rig, a mast, outriggers, lateen sail, sideboards, and a steering oar. Is that any fun?
Yeah, they're a tremendous amount of fun. In fact, so the American Canoe Association, you know, it's over 100 years old. Early on, they sponsored races of sailing canoes, and they're a riot. So, yeah, no, it's you've got to have the proper gear, and you have to have it set up right, and you have to know what you're doing. But there's a man at Canucopia has a company called Falcon Sails, and he makes sail kits for pretty much any paddle craft. And they'll have the lee boards, which are basically, you know, every sailing craft has to have if you're going to go upwind. Some sort of board hanging down, whether it's center board or a dagger board. Lee boards hang off the side of the boat, right, because they can't go through the bottom. And they need a rudder, and then you need a mast, and you need a sail. Sometimes you can put pontoons on that stick out a little bit, which make it a little bit safer. You know, just gives you a little bit more, you know, if you get a gust of wind, you're not going to flip. But yeah, they're and sailing kayaks is also just a riot. It's really fun. With kayaks, you're really close to the water. So, and you're kind of part of the water. So it's kind of like ice boating where you're like really down there close to it, right? So you get a really intimate experience. So, yeah, cool.
But when you tip one over, it must be...
It's like tipping any canoe over. You basically yank the mast and empty it out, flip it
out. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't try and pull it up on that. Yeah, the mast just slides out of the sleeve.
Okay.
But most people don't because they've got the pontoon on there. It just sticks out on a piece of aluminum about 3 feet, and it's just got a little inflatable pontoon. And as soon as you start to bury that, you'll know. That, you know, let go of the sheet, let things calm down a little bit, ease off. But they work great.
Yeah, if it was me out there, I'd be having a pontoon on the side for sure.
There are, and I would too. I mean, even if I knew how to sail, and I'm not very good at it, I would definitely want some help there.
Ron, does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lindsay emailed and wanted to switch to sea kayaking and explore the Great Lakes. How much experience should they have to make that jump?
Each person's different. So not knowing your previous experience and not knowing what you're doing now, I would say that the Great Lakes are wonderful to paddle. The thing that will keep you the safest is, number one, work with a guide who's been up there before until you're familiar with the area. They're trained to know when things are safe and when things are not. Then, you know, go with a group where you've got people that are already experienced, know how to do self-rescues and know how to do assisted rescues. But if you keep, again, it's like everything. If you keep your wits about you and watch things, you're going to be okay if you have all the precautions that I've mentioned. You know, make sure you're dressed for immersion because Lake Superior is very cold. And it doesn't matter if it's August and it's 80, the water's still 40, 45.
Yeah, it's cold.
So it's just if you have mentors, and by that I mean start with guides if you don't have mentors, but then work with people you know have been going there for a while, and you know you can kind of tell who the weekend warriors are and who the people that know what they're doing. So ask a lot of questions, and that's fine. But, you know, you've got 60 miles of open water between the North Shore of Superior and the Apostles, and weather can build pretty quickly. So, I mean, I've been up there, you know, a lot, and you just kind of know when you should stay home. That's the other thing. We got stuck on Oak Island one time because the wind came up and there were, you know, 5-foot rollers. I'm like, I'm just going to stay here. You know, I'm not in a hurry. It's like, get homeitis is probably the biggest problem for pilots and for paddlers.
I would agree. I would agree. Yep. You know, we had a listener call in, couldn't stay on the line, but wanted to thank you, Darren, for hosting the special needs workshop. Her daughter still remembers that her experience during the workshop.
Thank you. It's one of the things we do. And, well, that's why I'm a paddling evangelist. I want everybody to experience this.
Yeah, and is this something you do, you know, every year? Or
we have people that are trained to do it. Sometimes we do workshops. Sometimes we just have individual classes. If someone wants to take a class for a little bit extra money, they can have a person that works just with them. second instructor who's assigned to them. We have boats that have designed to deal with people's disabilities. We work with a company called Creating Ability out of Minnesota. Kevin has a daughter with a disability and is now branching out into not just paddle, but bike and other areas to create equipment because a lot of it's just bad or it's really expensive.
Yeah.
So he's working with veterans. He's working with everybody. But he's like me. He just wants people to paddle.
That is really, really cool. Allison and Sean emailed in for recommendations on paddles for long-distance paddling.
Interesting. It's whatever one you like the best. I paddle with traditional paddles a lot just because I like how they feel in the water. But generally, I tell people, buy the lightest paddle that you choose, to afford.
Yeah.
No one ever said my paddle's too light. I need a heavy one. So for long distances, light's better. It's clearly what you like. Some people prefer the bent shaft paddle, which has it's kind of a misnomer. The shaft isn't bent. There's a bend between the blade and the shaft that gives you a little bit more efficiency in a straight ahead stroke, and they're generally lighter. It's all about different styles.
And from Madison, wanted to remind everybody to clean their vehicle after each excursion to prevent transporting invasive species from one place to another.
Yeah, and everybody thinks Eurasian milfoil, right? And they see it hanging off the boat trailers and people pick it off. It's the spiny water flea is the one that sticks to kayaks. And that's, that's not a good one.
No.
So wipe off your kayaks for sure.
Well, we haven't talked a lot yet. You've mentioned a few of the speakers, but what's the range of kinds of things that people are going to be able to see at Canucopia?
Well, I kind of divide them into three different groups. So there's the aspirational, and that's people that, hey, I went to Baja and paddled with whales, and it was cool, and here's some pictures of it. And here I went to Wabi Kimi, and here's some pictures of it. And then there's
those are fun.
And those are great. Even if you're never going to go to Baja,
yeah, it's fun.
You might, and you might think, I can do this because everybody thinks that, expedition stuff is scary. When I go to Baja and I go with a group and we sleep in canvas tents on the beach and eat whatever we caught, it's not roughing it. I tell you that. You never know. My mom went on a Baja trip when she was 76. So
you never know. So yeah. there's that kind.
Right. There's that kind. The other one is sort of the instructional, which is the how to's. So how to choose a paddle, how to choose a boat, how to paddle better, how to fine tune your stroke, things like that. So more instructional about the technique and things like that. And then places to go. And then the third one are just sort of very entertaining. But it's that Latin term, delight in order to teach, right? Delectare docere, right? So people like Kevin Callan, who comes and he's hilarious, but behind every joke is a nugget of truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's people that are entertainers. And then Jerry Vandiver comes. Jerry Vandiver is a platinum record songwriter from Nashville who has written for some of the big names, Tim McGraw, Kenny Chesney, people like that. Mm-hmm. And he's a paddler. He's an avid Boundary Waters paddler, and he started writing songs about paddling, and they're just lovely. And I think he's on his third CD now, so he comes up and he brings a band from Nashville, and we become really good friends with the band as well. They all have their own CDs, and I follow them on Patreon and give them $5 a month. But they're such good people. And the fiddle player, actually her home was something damaged in the hurricane down there, in the tornado down there. And she said, you know what? It's not going to get better if I stay at home. So she's coming up, right? Because she doesn't want to miss being around the people that love her.
Oh, man. Well, Gary in Eau Claire has a question for you, so let's go there. Gary, hi.
Hi. I'm interested, as long as you mentioned Joel Robinette, and I've watched his videos on YouTube, I noticed he uses a double-bladed paddle. And so I was trying to get a long kayak paddle to use in a short boat that I have, a canoe. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about using double-bladed paddles in a canoe?
Sure. So there's some canoeists that scoff at that. It's like, oh, you know, it's not really canoeing. It's like, you know, it's a sport, not a cult, right? Just enjoy yourself, paddle with it. You need to get a longer paddle to use with the canoe because you're sitting higher and you're trying to clear the boat as well. The good news is there's several companies, Benny Branch's Aquabound, Werner Paddles, that make adjustable paddles. So you can get a paddle that has a 20-centimeter adjustment. So you can get one you can paddle with a kayak, and then when you get in your canoe, you just pop it and stretch it out.
Ah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, I think one of the nice things about Canoecopia, for example, is the fact that we've got all these questions about different kinds of canoes and paddles and all of the accessories and pretty much everything we could think about in terms of the merchandise side of things is there, and you can handle it.
Well, and things you didn't think about. And that's the fun part is like, oh, I didn't know they made those. That's cool. You get to talk to the people. Often you're talking to the person that either owns the company or designed the product. We're not a very big industry. We're pretty small. We're about the same size as the golf ball industry. And that's just the balls, right?
Yeah.
I wish people lost canoes as much as they lost balls. But yeah, it's not a religion. It's a sport, right? Just go and enjoy yourself, and don't take yourself too seriously.
So we've got Canoecopia this weekend, March 13th through the 15th. When does it start on Friday?
It's 4 o'clock. Yeah.
4 o'clock to the evening.
Yeah, 4 to the evening. We're thinking about moving it to 3 to 8 next year just because we're all tired. Go home. Yeah, it's all hands on deck right now. And my staff have been working and will work since Monday all the way through the weekend. And then we close the shop on Monday and Tuesday. So they get time off and they can go do laundry and sleep. And then we'll be closed on Wednesday, Thursday, putting the shop back together. And then we open up on Friday.
And Canoecopia on Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday it runs what?
9 to 6.
9 to 6, and Sunday?
10 to 5.
10 to 5. And everything you need to know about speakers, schedule, and all that's on your website.
Yeah, it's all at Canoecopia.com, yeah.
Canoecopia.com. Darren, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Appreciate having you with us. Darren Bush, Chief Paddling Evangelist, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, and by way of full disclosure, I can mention that Rutabaga Paddle Sports is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, so it's great for that as well. Well, sometimes, you know, when you're in the out-of-doors, you run into ticks. Some people do, and in Wisconsin, a lot of people do, and we're going to be talking next about preventing Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. That next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.